Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. Well, we really have a wonderful show for you tonight. It's an exciting subject that we have not talked about. It is the study of fine jewelry. We have a gemologist with us tonight, and I will introduce her in a few minutes. But before I do, I want to go through my little housekeeping that I do every week so that people will know how to call in, how to call in and ask a question if you want to, and where you can also hear other episodes. So let me start. If you want to call in while we're on the air and ask any questions or have a comment or say hello, then you dial 516-453-6063 and you press the number 1. If you want to hear former episodes, and we've done now almost 30, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. We really welcome you to go in and listen to some of the episodes, and then know that this also has a video component to it. It is the after show afterthoughts, and my guest and I always spend about 10 or 15 minutes, and we do a little video finishing up our conversation, and it is housed on YouTube. It's archived on YouTube as well as it is archived on my page on Facebook, Godly Entertainment, and my Lenny Godfrey pages. The YouTube page is the Lenny Godfrey page, so you can go there and see about 30 of the other guests. All of that done, let me tell you, it has been my pleasure to know most of my adult life this wonderfully talented, beautiful woman whose name is Lou Willard. Lou Willard majored in sociology at Johnson C. Smith University and jewelry design at New York's Fashion Institute of Technology. More importantly, she is certified as a professional gemologist on the Gemology Institute of America, by the Gemological Institute of America, and a graduate of the prestigious Protocol School of Washington with a specification in corporate etiquette and international protocol. She also is an entrepreneur of 35 years. She established and developed the Lou Willard Enterprise firm, and it is the New York City Diamond District's first woman and minority-owned fine jewelry design and manufacturing firm. Now, with all of that, and with me mispronouncing gemologist, I'm going to introduce my really wonderful and beautiful friend, Miss Lou Willard. Good evening, Lou.
Well, good evening, Lenny. You know, just add another 10 years to this 35 years. It's been 45 years, well, actually 46 years because I've known you 45 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it was before you. You got your jewelry for me to get married, remember?
Yes, that's how we really met. A friend of my husband's recommended you, and we have been like family ever since.
But and for sure.
You know, I'm so excited to have you on this evening because, you, as you know people over the years, you know them in the moment. You know them day by day by day, and your experiences are parallel. What I don't know about you and what I want the audience to know about you is how did Lou Willard become Lou Willard? Where, let's start at the beginning, back when you were not in New York City and your name wasn't Willard. And tell me a little bit about your family and your trip into New York City, how you got here.
All right. Well, I grew up on a farm outside of Newton, North Carolina. And the only person from Newton that could ever put it on the map would be Pauletta Pearson Washington, who's Denzel's wife, Denzel Washington's
yes.
wife. I used to babysit her. The father was the principal high school in Newton. But anyway, going back before that, having grown up on a farm, it was actually picked cotton, Lenny.
Picked cotton? Really?
Yes, picked cotton.
Oh, my goodness.
You know,
all right, see, I'm learning something already.
I'm
okay.
good at it. So I did it.
Mm-hmm.
That fact, many years ago, the NAACP sent me cotton as a cotton seeds as a joke. I think I told you that. You know,
yes.
I was here in New York, and you know, and I was very active with the NAACP, and you know, for many years as well. You know, with 100 Black Women and all those organizations. As a matter of fact, I became socially involved in the movement while I was in high school. But I have so many stories, Lenny. Maybe I should try to put them in chronological order. You asked
yes.
me how
well,
I'm gonna
try to keep you in that order, you know, now
okay.
because I wanna keep us going from your developmental years into what gave you the impetus to come to New York City. What inspired you?
Oh.
You were involved in the movement in North Carolina?
Yes, at Johnson C. Smith, integrated lunch counters and that sort of thing. I was in school with the Moores and the Spauldings. Many of them, you know, looked absolutely white. So, I didn't, but we were able to sit at lunch counters, you know, because I'm just biracial, that's all. I'm not, they're almost thoroughbreds. But anyway, so we would integrate lunch counters and we would be herded off to jail, but never booked, just harassment. And we go
mm-hmm.
back and do it again the next week. So, that was my start, you know. And go ahead, Annie, I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that's the start of your activism, because that's one of the things that I wanted to say in introducing you, that you're really quite an activist. Socially, and you've inspired me to be one to be interested in doing and pursuing that whole kind of thing. But let me ask you. So it was a weekly thing that you all would go and sit at the counters and get the harassment and arrests, and then go home and then come back the next week. You would do it.
Go back to school. I graduated high school at 15. By the time
oh.
I was 17, I had to be 2 years of college, and
okay.
I was, you know, like sort of thrown into an environment with, you know, older classmates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I just followed. I followed the activism. I mean, I remember, you know, the colored signs at the bus stations, down in Newton, and separate water fountains and all of that. So, you know, it actually is the meaning, you know, for people to have had to go through that.
Yes.
And I didn't like it, you know, and I still don't, you know, like injustices. I mean, it's just something that doesn't settle well with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I developed, you know, the attitude that, you know, let's fight for it. Let's do something about it. Not in a small way, you know, but when my mother... I was, you know, raised by my grandparents in my early years, because my mother came to New York and she worked at Harlem Hospital as a nurse's aide. And
I
then,
see.
You know, I came, you know, to live with her. And after 2 years of socialization at Johnson C. Smith, I did all of my social work. I completed all of that. So I was more than ready to move on into a career that would be more meaningful for me rather than just coming and just being a social worker in New York City, you know, because that's what happened.
What inspired you to get involved in the art of jewelry making, designing fine jewelry, gemologist, that whole thing? Because that's what's fascinating with me about it, your love of the arts. I mean, because you always love to go to the theater, you always love to sing and do all those things. What in your childhood inspired that? Do you remember?
Yes, in the segregated schools, my grammar school, my second grade teacher's name was Esther Della Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 years ago, I mean, she was National Mother of the Year. And it was she that inspired me because she would say, we would have to draw pictures. And, you know, we were pretty bad at it. And so she would say, well, you know, we'll try this. Try looking at any object and imagine that it's something else. What else could be? What could you do with it? How could you rearrange it? How could you take it apart and make something else out of it? And that sort of perked my interest. So then I became interested in fashion. At that age, you know, I wanted to dress a certain way, and I was an athlete too. You know, I was a basketball star, played all-state basketball, you know, back in high school, and a track star. But I did everything, anything that came my way that was going to better me, I tried to embrace it.
Yes.
And that's how I got out of the cotton pills, and I didn't have to be cotton anymore.
Yes. That's another concept that when people who know you well are going to say, oh, that's very interesting, because that's not one where we associate you.
No, they know it, but what they say is, oh, come on.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, getting you then to New York with your mother, is that when the aspect of FIT came into
I actually came to New York to go to Columbia, and I did it for half a semester, and I needed, you know, I needed. I started modeling in the days of Sarah Lou Harris, and you know, Ebony and Jet, and then I really needed a job. I mean, I needed something that would make real money, because you know, modeling for black women just wasn't working that well.
It wasn't that profitable.
Few and far between, and many of my friends who modeled with me ended up going to Europe and making a name for themselves, but I didn't do that. After that, I really wanted to do something, so I decided I'm going to be a fashion designer. I mean, I love of clothes and fine things, and I'm going to do this. So I started FIT, and that lasted for a while, and I met a man named Tony Parrish who was teaching jewelry designing. And I said, well, this is something I want to see this. I love this. I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in doing it, in starting that, which is a trade, I actually looked for a job in a diamond district. And I landed a job with a company called JSOL and Sons. And that's where I actually, became skilled at what I was doing, because this man, George Sol, really gave me an opportunity to do whatever I thought I could do.
And, I think this evening is going to be very informative to those people and those people who've called in. We've got a list of people who've called in already now to understand that the craft of making fine jewelry is we take it for granted. We go into a store and we see something and it's beautiful. We don't even think about, you know, the craft that has gone into it, the artistry that goes into it. Can you, in a little bit of time, kind of walk us through what your process is. Do you have a vision when you first start a piece, or does a piece just turn into something? I know you can't take the whole, you know, the whole time doing it, but it's fascinating for us, I think, to be exposed that this is an art form, really needs to be respected more than it is, because of it, I'm spoiled of it because I have you and I understand that the different gems, the different stones and precious stones and those things. But if you don't have that, can you just give us a little insight as to what makes you do the beautiful diamond hearts, I say, that you've done over the years?
Well, you know, the diamond heart was my logo.
Yes.
And you noticed that, you know, hundreds of my friends wear diamond hearts because,
yes.
You know, and it was popular back in the day. But what really inspired me was how many things could we do different that would sell? How many, you know, categories of monetary categories, because, you know, back in the day, jewelry and gold, things did not cost what they do today. I mean, I remember when gold was $23 an ounce. So at any rate.
And about how much is it now, Lou?
It's something around, it's the penny weight now, probably $1,800, $1,900
an ounce.
No, penny weight.
Yeah,
a small amount, small quantity.
Okay.
But having said that, you know, I had an opportunity because this firm actually made jewelry for the Kay stores and Marcus Purchasing Company, which was in Macy's, and, you know, I can go on, and, you know, all over the country. So I was given the opportunity to go, what do you think about this? What could we do with this? What category did we put this in that might sell, that might appeal to this audience or that audience? And I just kept on developing. But my real talent came in that I, you know, jewelry is a precise, it's a science. I mean, you have to be precise.
It is.
I mean, we actually had measure everything and do everything. I became so good at it that I could do a half a penny weight, a millimeter without even looking at it. And, of course, once you know I got the groove, I could move faster because I didn't have to do all that measuring and all those things. And then back in the day, we had to carve wax by hand, you know, to make a model. You had to carve the wax out, and it had to be burned out, and then made into a metal model, then made into a mold if it was going to be reproduced in quantity. So it's a lot involved. It's just not just something. You have to be dedicated, and it wasn't always clean work either. Got cleaner when I hired people to do some of the things that I could oversee or orchestrate. So it was a process, and you really had to be dedicated to it. It's something that you either loved or you didn't.
Well, how long did you stay in that business before you started to establish the Lou Willard Enterprises?
About 8 years or so. I mean, when I first opened at 48 West 48th Street in Diamond District, you know, Coretta King came out. I'm trying to figure out that year. I mean, I had already been in the movement. The Tuskegee Airmen were my customers. All of those, the old-timers who had excelled, the baseball players like my friend Arlene Howard's husband was Elston Howard, and he was the first black Yankee player, Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Don Newcomb, all of those kinds of people came. And, of course, you know, my first husband, you know, who died young,
there's no way we're going to have this conversation without talking about Rick. I was going to get to that subject in a little bit.
But but you know, having two husbands in form of entertainment industry, and having role models. I mean, I've got to be the luckiest person in the world because came here just very early age, and my friends. I mean, the people who mentored me. You know, mentoring is very important. That's why I try to mentor people now. I still mentor young women because it is so important to have role models. And I had some very good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about it, I'll tell you.
Yes, I do. One of the things before we get to, it is impossible for me to talk to you about your life without talking about my heart, your first husband, Rick Willard. And then how much I loved your second husband, Stan Hoffman. But I want, before that, I want to get to the people who influenced you. Give me a couple of names, because I know a couple of the people. I have many, many names that you were your customers that people recognize, the Michael Jacksons and Aretha Franklins and all of those people were people that you designed for. But
Well, these names you will know, but you will know them certainly in a different way. I was embraced by a woman named Lena Rackley, who married Clyde McFadden.
Okay.
And
people have to know Clyde McFadden was a musician, if they don't know.
A singer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway, from there, Lena. Actually, I mean, she had many talents too. I mean, she was a caterer. She did all kinds of things, but she worked at Johnson's Publishing Company, and so she had a tremendous influence in my life. And then from there was Jeanette Hibbler, who was married to Al Hibbler. Then there was a group, and this really wonderful mentor who was like really just lived until 10 years ago. Her name was Ruth Bowen, and she was married to Billy Bowen, who was in the Ink Spots, the founder of the Ink Spots. And
yes.
that's so old, and I was so young. But Ruth Bowen actually, I mean, see, all of these are players in my life, and it's so significant because there was one. It's almost like each one teach one. So they had an organization, but I was well married and had my son, by the time this happened. But Ruth belonged to an organization called the Rinky Dinks, and it was the businessmen's wives, the music men's wives. And they didn't have any young, Barbara Jaquette was, who was married to Illinois Jaquette, was the youngest person they had in that group. Everybody else was pretty, getting up a little bit in maturity, I'd say. And they decided to take in younger members. So they took me and Ruth Ennis, who was Stan Hoffman's secretary at the time. We became Rinky Dinks. Now, in that group, I mean, these women embraced me. Catherine Basie, Lucille Armstrong, Mona Hinton, and everyone married to somebody very famous, and they had ideas. They were role models. They were what do you call it I started to say pace setter. I don't mean that, but they were very interesting women. And,
trailblazers, like
trailblazers. That's the name, trailblazers. So, I suddenly find myself with all these mothers, and they really took me on their wing. They really looked out for me. And then, there's hardly anybody that was in that music industry that didn't cross my path and become friends, like the Isley Brothers, what's his name, Brooke Benton. I can't even remember all people unless I really sit down and think about it. Every superstar that was black and somebody came across my path.
Yeah.
And
well,
I never had.
I've been at your home when Dick Gregory would come by. And I mean, you know, these are all people who not only, and I want people to know that not only were they your people that you dealt the business with, but they became, they admired the fact that you had your business, that you were a female and excelling in the business that you were doing. And that's an important, that's an important element, I think, in the conversation.
Yeah, it's very, and you know, Lenny, I never went to the bank for a loan because of these people. You know, I had a high-profile clientele. I never went to the bank for a loan. Of course, I never became a millionaire either, but, I mean, you know, not, you know, in that sense. I guess in some ways, yes, but not in that sense. But, you know, the people rallied around me. It was amazing. I had an amazing life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's absolutely incredible. And one of the things that I wanted to do is as we make this journey, I can't have a conversation with you without talking about a person that I met at the same time that I met you, and that was your first husband, Rick Willard. And his influence, I think, on me was his humanity, his kindness, his generosity. But the two of you together were such a powerful couple because of the simple, your involvement in activism. One of the things that both of you were involved in, I believe he was involved in, he had radio. It was one of his strong suits in his life. And
well,
he was an actor. Go ahead.
I met Rick when I was 18 years old, and we married a week before my 19th birthday, and I kept on going with anything else I was doing. But having said that, he was at that time a programmer for WNW Radio with William B. Williams, Bob Landers, and the likes of those people in that day. So he then, you know, after a couple of years, left and went to Atlantic Records, where he did promotion, and then he, you know, he kept being promoted, and he actually ended up at Atlantic Electra Atco, Warner Brothers, you know, and it became executive of WEA. But all of that, you know, that took place over a period of time, and you know that actually Rick died from a fatal a one-time heart attack in his office.
Yes.
So, and then, well, you know, ask me some questions because I might get ahead of you.
I know, you know, I mean, your progression is, you know, I wanted everyone to kind of see how the arts and influence, people who were in the arts influenced your career, influenced and inspired you to continue on. One of the things that I think that I want to get to is after Rick had passed away and you had established a relationship then with Stan Hoffman. And Stan was in the business, but then went into another business of artistry again. And that was fascinating.
Okay, well, Stan was vice president of Chess Janice Records, good friend of Rick Willard's, and I just kind of inherited him. You know, I really never went out and looked for another husband. He was just there and did all kinds of nice things. And over a time, you know, a friendship turned into something more significant. But before I go into Stan, could I tell you something? Because I want
please.
You to know this. You know, my friend and my mentor, my major mentor is Ruth Bowen. And Ruth Bowen, as I told you, was married to Billy Bowen with the Ink Spots. And so she had a friend, LaRue Mann, and LaRue worked with Dinah Washington. And Dinah Washington owned Queen Booking. And out of Queen Booking, you know, was Sammy Davis Jr. and, you know, and all kinds of artists. But later on, Aretha and King Curtis and, you know, and just a litany of people after that. But Ruth Bowen actually bought Queen Booking and ran for many years. She actually was active in it until she died about 10 years ago. And she was so very significant in my life that I have to mention her, you know. So she and Lena Rossley and Mike Batta.
Mm-hmm.
It so happens when Rick died, you know, of course, we lived in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
We had a house in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So Rick, my son, was in college, and I was like almost afraid to, you know, go home to a big empty house, a four-story empty house. And at any rate, I needed, so Stan Hoffman lived on West 58th Street, Columbus, you know, Columbus Circle down here. And he said, well, there's an apartment available in my building. It just happened to be on his floor also.
Mm-hmm.
So I
mm-hmm.
took the apartment and, about Stan, he just never let me have it. He was just such a good friend. He just never let me have any real problems. I mean, if I had a problem, he solved it. If I, you know, needed something and he was just there.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Mm-hmm.
After a time, we became an item.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, and after a few years, we became permanent. So, Stanley, you know, was, I mean, he actually was very instrumental in Chuck Berry doing My Ding-a-ling.
Yes. His musical career morphed into a whole nother career, which was the prize fighting career, which is still an art form.
A guy named Bob Middleman came in Stan's office to sell him a demo, a record. That's how they did it back in the day. If somebody cut a record of somebody and they thought it was going to go someplace, they'd have to go to a label to get that record promoted. It takes a lot of money to promote a record and to, you know, expose it and make it a hit. So by this time, Stan and Martin Slachter was president, Stan's vice president of Chess Janice, and some other labels that were under that umbrella. But they decided to go into business for themselves. So they developed Prelude Records, if you remember, Lenny. And on that, they had these hits like Bronze Jolie, Come to Me, and Push Push in the Bush. And, you know, just it was a dance label.
Mm-hmm,
and then later on, they bought Savoy Records, which is a black gospel label. But this guy came into Stan's office to sell him this record, and he was not interested. So he asked him if he liked the fight business, professional fighting. He said yes. So Julius Manley and James Broad had just come out of the Olympics, and they were looking for somebody to sign of a manager. So he played the tapes for Stan, and Stan got very interested. So after a year or two, Stan was full-fledged. He signed those guys, and he did them both until maybe 1989.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's working himself to death, running all over the country, all over the world.
Oh, I remember.
Businesses.
Yes, I remember. Sitting in fights, I was fascinated by that whole life that you all had invited us into. But now, Lou, I've gotten you all the way through your business, and now you're settled into your second marriage. And I have to tell you now that we only have about 20 minutes left. See, I told you this was going to go fast. I do want to ask you a couple of questions that I think are introspective. And one of them is, in your own words, who is Lucille Shade Willard Hoffman? Who is she?
Well, I am a friend, a supporter, mentor. I'm political. I mean, I'm not so much anymore because, you know, I stopped doing quite a few things the last few years. I stopped doing a lot of things because of Stan's lengthy illness, you know, and his subsequent death, you know, on February 7th of this year, 2021. But I was, you know, I guess an activist. I don't know if I was any one thing, Lenny. I was bouncing all over the place, you know, with friends everywhere. I was at the inception of the Congressional Black Caucus. I did fundraising, I mean, volunteer fundraising, you know, for Charles Rangel. I did give him the first fundraiser he ever had when he ran for Congress. And, you know, I did weddings for Charlie's daughter, for Percy Sutton's granddaughter, and many, many more. As a matter of fact, even the 25th one for you, your renewal of vows. I'm all over the place because cooking, catering kind of thing. I mean, I never did it for money, but it was recreational for me because I came from such an exact science that I didn't like to measure. You know, and cooking was a sort of something that I just did, floral arrangements, gardening. I don't know who I am, you know. I'm just still trying to figure it out.
Well, there lies my answer. Thank you very much, as we all are trying to figure out. But for me, you're so many different things. You are family. You are a person of stature, I believe. For Carl and I, you really made our wedding possible, and through many, many ventures that were underlying, where people were trying not to let us have the place that we wanted, the churches that we wanted, and you made all of that possible. I think belonging to groups like the 100 Black Women and 100 Black Men and all of those, I can say the names of people that I have met through you or been in their presence because of you. And it was New York Congressman Charles Rangel and Mayor David Dinkins and Governor David Patterson. These are all people that I've met with you, and your influence has been on, I think, young people. Very impressionable. I know women in my generation, a little younger, a little older, who always go to you for advice. And I thank you for always being there. But I still have to ask you a couple of other questions. Given this wonderful life that you've been given, and given the influx of the arts that has been a thread all through your life, what was your most exciting moment? What stands out the most in your life?
Well, you know, there was a wonderful woman named Ellen Terry. She was a journalist and very, very beautiful woman. I had so many teachers, but Ellen Terry was a journalist in Africa. She lived there for many years, and, you know, she worked, you know, with powerful people. So she introduced me to Chief Adu in Nigeria. I made his death jewels and subsequently met a lot of people in Nigeria. I also, through my work, met Chad Tubman, who was president of Liberia's Sun, and Joe Richards, who I'm a little dull on this because it's a long time, but I tried to actually go to their mines and see how the mining process, you know, coming along, how people did it, and all of that. Of course, that never really happened because, you know, it was too much turmoil in Monrovia at that time. But I think the greatest highlights in my real world was when Stanley's heavyweight champion, who knocked out Lennox Lewis. I mean, he bit into Lennox Lewis, but of course, I mean, he was outbid. So but Lennox Lewis trained at Stan's camp and early on, before he went to London, and Hasim Rahman, preparing. So he actually knocked Lennox Lewis out in Johannesburg, South Africa. So this became, we were back and forth there, you know, for not only that fighter, but others as well. And Charlene Hunter Gault and a host of Americans lived there for opportunity, and they were doing well. I mean, I think Charlene passed, but her husband Ron is still around. Having said that, I was invited to speak. Now, I'm there for boxing, but somehow, you know, I don't even remember how somebody knew what I did. You know, I was a jewelry developer, and so they invited me actually to speak there. They had one building, and it's something like our design buildings, you know, where they do furniture and all that kind of thing, except it was all diamonds and gold and platinum and all that kind of thing. So they had set aside a, you know, very small space for the black South Africans to bring their diamonds that they mined out of the rivers. They would find, you know, little diamond nuggets, rough, and they were teaching them how to cut. And I was so saddened by that process because I knew in my heart of hearts that if that's what they were giving them, and that's what they were actually teaching them, not to negate the fact that it is good to know how to cut a diamond, but from the riverbeds, they were tiny little things, and then they were allowed to sell them, and they had no way of parlaying these little things into enough money to be significant. I was saddened by that, but you know, that's something I really couldn't do anything about. Just to encourage them to try to, you know, go to work for some of the mining companies if that was possible, at least to try, so that they could make money and find out how to navigate some of the real diamond mines, if they could get something that would you know, help them move forward, you know, something that would be profitable for them. But I was humbled by actually being asked to do that. Also, you know, by the number of people, you know, we think of Africa as downtrodden and all of that. There's a lot of wealth amongst blacks in Africa. It's you know, I mean, they live, you know, the upper mobile people in Africa, I mean, they live in mansions, except that they have to have
quite well.
Around
yes.
them. They
yes.
have, you have to have guards to protect them, you know, but that's what, if they choose that as a way of life, that's them. But
it seems that at the same time, because my next question was what was one of the saddest moments. It seems that at the same time as it was a wonderful and humbling experience to you, it was a very sad moment for you.
Something that's beyond my control. It's something that I would have liked to have worked with. But you can't work with the government, you know, with diamonds, you know, because if you bother, you know, Antwerp, you know, Belgium, I mean, they control the supply, and it's There's nothing you can do about it.
This is all very interesting. You know, I don't think a lot of people understand this, and we have a little bit more than 10 minutes left. I want to open this up. If anyone wants to call in and ask a question, now is the time.
Could I tell you one thing real quickly, and I'm going to tell you. You know,
yes.
Businesses for me, you know, I came back to the business after being out for 7 years or so and in a different kind of way. So I don't have time to talk about it. But I want to tell you about it, and maybe you can do it at a different time, because this is something that's going to be very interesting. Okay. Finish.
All right. Well, no, one of the things that I want to talk about with you is, the first I want to open it up so that people can ask you questions if they want to, because it is, you know, a lot of people, they're here, but they're just listening to a lot of the information. But and I want to just say to them that you can call in. If you're on, you need to press the number 1. Or if you want to call in, you should call in at 516-453-6063. So I have a question for you already. And then after that, I want to know what you are doing now. That's the whole thing. But let me welcome this guest. Thank you for calling, Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Please give your name and where you're calling from. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was on. This is Gary Jones. I was just listening to this interview. Miss Lou is an amazing lady, and her life is just very, very interesting. She should definitely write a book. But yes, one of the questions that I had as well was, you know, looking forward to or seeing what is she involved with now, what she's getting ready to, what's next for Miss Lou Willis?
Thank you very much.
Well,
that's what we're all curious about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's next for me involved this young man on the phone? So Gary, why don't you just tell them in your own words what I was distracted by phone ringing that I hadn't expected to ring. We're doing something very innovative, very creative, and it's not so much as us sitting at the bench anymore and carving out waxes and doing. It's a total new concept. We are developing. Gary, tell them who you are.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I'm Gary Jones. I'm a business development coordinator. I'm involved in a lot of different things, and I met Miss Lou several months ago, and it was an amazing relationship that has begun, and I'm so really lucky that I had the opportunity to meet her. But I have talked about an idea with Miss Lou. It's going to be a national project, okay? And so now it's at the early stages right now, but we're not going to be able to, you know, to give a whole lot of details because, again, this is America, okay? But the project we're working on.
Yes. You don't want to give too much away. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Right. So the project that we're working on, it's going to be something where.
Hello. Can you continue? Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Lenny, but I think he went off. But that's okay because.
No. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah,
go on, keep going.
Okay, I'm sorry, but yeah, live TV, live radio, all kinds of things can happen. Yes, but we talked about the possibility of putting a major project together that's going to go national. We have another artist. He's a drawing artist down there in Louisville, Kentucky. He's the young man that drew the Breonna Taylor mural down there on the side of that building that profiled by ABC and NBC, and he's one of our designers that is going to be submitting some designs to Miss Lou, and Miss Lou is going to work her magic. But it's going to be something that we all are going to be proud of. And one of the things that we would like to do, once we get near to completion, we would like to present you with one of those pieces, okay, so you can see how this thing is going to be mesmerizing to this nation. And so that's as far as I can take it right now. But we have
excuse me, I think Gary needs his own show with you, Lenny.
Yeah, well, I think that would be a lovely idea. And we will talk about that at another time. But I am so honored that this idea is being exposed on my show for the first time, and that there's something
of,
that I will be able to look at and gaze upon.
This is all part of the civil rights. This is all going back to the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
it's gonna be nice.
As you said, in America, it's very important that you don't give away too much too early in the development of a project.
Right.
Because,
right. Yes.
You know, somebody else has a tendency to kind of you see it walking down the street. So this is a conversation that we will have.
Yes.
We will definitely have this and have more of it, so that we can follow the progression of this project.
Yes.
And again,
okay,
like I said with Lou Willard, Lou, I have known for many, many years, is always,
okay,
I'm never surprised by something that she can develop, she's involved,
right,
in. And I really,
yes,
I thank you so very, very much for calling in and letting me this secret very early on. And I intend to be in contact with you. But thank you again.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay.
Thank you, Gary.
And continued success to you, Ms. Godfrey. Okay,
thank
Ms.
you
Lou,
so very
talk
much.
To you later.
Okay, talk to you later. I look forward to talking to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, it's going to be a very different way of connecting business with movements.
Oh,
and I'm very
wonderful.
Excited about it, Lenny.
Yes, well, I'm excited about it too, and I'm always open to be able to look at something that before it's done, so that I feel very privileged to be the first person to hear about all of this happening, and I'm sure I'll hear more about it along the way. But at this point in time, along with that project that you have your immediate project, what is, Carl, and he's a financial analyst, so he's always into what is your 5-year plan, what is your 2-year plan. Now that life is changing for you, what is it that you are thinking about? Maybe embarking upon, besides the project, that particular project, I mean, long range in your career, you are now coming back into the business after a long time, a hiatus out of it. What do you see for yourself?
I've known you for 45 years. I'm 82 years old now. And I concentrate on my mental and physical health, just doing everything I can do to make 100 years so I can have that career, a new career. But when we develop what we're working on now, I think it's going to, be ongoing for years to come.
Well, I look forward to that. I really do. I know that also because you are a mentor of so many people, who do you think you are influencing now? When you think about the people that are coming behind you and the generations behind you, do you have anybody in mind that you specifically have said, well, I hope that their vision carries on what I'm doing now or supplements what I'm doing or parallels what? Do you have anyone in mind like that now?
I don't. Maybe my youngest granddaughter, maybe, but she's an actress, as you know. So
yes,
you know,
yes.
So maybe, but to be honest, I don't. What I would like to do is have someone just appear, because one of the reasons I teach etiquette protocol is that I really want to help the generation of young Black women and men, for that matter, have a different mindset. I want to be a positive influence. I mean, I don't even know how to articulate this, Lenny, but I want to see them develop the kind of humanity, humility, grace that we need as a race to move on.
Yes. Well, again, one of the things that you did with your etiquette and protocol business, one of the reasons why is to instill, I think, the disciplines that you have a vision there. We only have a couple of minutes, but talk about that for a little bit with me.
Oh, okay, but, you know, I never charged anybody. I did Frederick Douglass High School and Julie Richmond. I tried to do Julie Richmond and, you know, didn't work too well, but some of the refugees from Haiti, you know, for the last big quake, the one before, you know, the trouble now. Mm-hmm. We, you know, worked with some of those people to make sure that they had an easy transition. I gave up Christmas for myself, you know, to help them, because I was trying to set an example, you know, for, you know, I've been a lot of places and done a lot of things. I mean, I've been mostly everywhere in the world except Antarctica, but I need to leave this world better than I found it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to make that footprint. You want to,
yes,
that legacy, that footprint.
I
wanna
see, yes. I mean, so many of our people, you know, we have our Jack and Jills. I've been, you know, part of those things too. But what about the people who don't have those opportunities? Those are the people I'd like to reach.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know,
I think, that's going to be a continuation of us making that discussion on Zoom, on video, in the after show, Afterthoughts. We are down now to less than 2 minutes, and so I'm going to stop you right there. We're going to take a break, you and I, after this finishes, and then we're going to resume it on Zoom. So I'm going to say to you, Lucille Shade Willard Hoffman, it has been my pleasure to know you all these years, to have you on this program, to continue a conversation with you. Next week, I have a publisher, Bathsheba Monk, that's coming on. So you strong women inspire me, and I thank you. I thank you for every moment that you have given me this evening and every bit of inspiration and encouragement that you have given me and my family all these years. I really do thank you.
Well, you know, you've brought a lot of pleasure to my life as well. You're sticking it up, still kicking it up on the piano, will you be?
Yes, that will be an image. I think I shall have that all my life, and I'm so proud of it. But all right, I'm going to say goodnight to my listeners. I'm going to thank you all so much. And I want you to look for on YouTube and on Godly Entertainment page and my page on Facebook, the video of this, Miss Lou Willard and myself. So thank you very much. And I'll talk to you in a little while, Lou. Talk to you now.
Thank you. Thank you, Lenny.
Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever.